You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Today, my guest is Dr. Carmen Bolter. Dr. Bolter is a professor at the University of Calgary in Canada. She has been researching and writing about the sacred feminine and goddess in ancient Egypt around the world for two decades. Her book, Angels and Archetypes, An Evolutionary Map of Feminine Consciousness, traces fragments of information about matriarchal cultures in pre-dynastic Egypt, prehistoric Greece, and around the world. Since 1995, Carmen has been leading sacred site journeys to Egypt, the Mediterranean, Peru, and Tibet. She has traveled to 51 countries exploring ancient mysteries. Her new two DVD set, The Pyramid Code, is a magnificent revelation and exploration in five complete programs. It's a moving documentary which contains astounding new information, which, frankly, I've never seen before on the screen. So let's welcome Carmen to the show now and find out more. Hi, Carmen. How are you?
Good. Hi, Lance.
Hey. Well, I just wanted to compliment you on the Pyramid Code. I can't urge people enough to see it, to get it, because you do an incredible job in those five segments of weaving together a vast, multidimensional composite of information that I've never seen before or heard.
It's hard to find original material these days, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Well, I guess the truth is out there, isn't it?
It certainly is.
One of the things that enchanted me about the film, I kind of fell in love with Hakim. When I started watching. At first, I didn't know who he was. I'm not a scholar, and I haven't researched Egyptology that much. But he was so deep, wise, and knowledgeable, and charming. Could you share a bit about Hakim, what he told you, and who he was?
Hakim has passed now. It's going to be 2 years in August. He was an indigenous wisdom keeper who was raised in the village of Abusir at the foot of the pyramids. And he also did training as an archaeologist in Scandinavia, and he's one of the original tour guides in Egypt. He was like number 50 on the list, and now they're up to 8,700 or something. So he understood and knew the ancient language of Suf, which is related to Sufism, but that's the language before Arabic in the land of Kemp, which is what Egypt was before. So he's not coming from the scholarly, recent, traditional Egyptological perspective. He's coming from a deeper truth that has been passed down through the ages through stories.
Well, he certainly shares information as you do, and you have others notable scholars on the DVD who all bring their insights and their wisdom to bear on what's really happening. Now, the pyramids, let me see, where can we go with this? From your research and insight, do you have a working theory about the pyramids and their real purposes and their age as well?
Well, again, it's going to be difficult to prove that definitively, but what I've been looking to do is create a context to make sense of what the pyramids are. So for sure they're going to be multidimensional and multi-purpose. They span over such a long period of time that they would have had different uses at different times. And I think that the 2450 BC date that traditionalists give is the most recent restoration. So, you know, your house could have easily been built in 1965 and had its last paint job in 2008. And so that doesn't mean it was built in 2008.
Right.
And so there's a whole network of underground passageways. The Nile used to run right beside the pyramid fields in front of the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx. And it's most certainly, it has to do with an energy production. Passive energy, non-polluting implosion energy, as Hakim would say, as opposed to our static electricity that's more explosive. It had to do with the transmutation of the atom and the water molecule to separate out the oxygen and the hydrogen, and they were able to harness that power. The pyramids themselves, their placement, absolutely correspond to a sky-ground correlation, and so there's a configuration between Orion, who's pointing his sword toward the Pleiades, and with Sirius behind him, and they call it the dog star, because a dog follows along behind us. And so there's six distinct sites, north and south of the Great Pyramid, and Abu Roush is the northernmost point that corresponds to Sirius. The Great Pyramid second and third correspond to the belt of Orion, and Abu Sir, which is adjacent to the village that Hakim was born in, it corresponds to the Pleiades. And then the celestial Nile, the Nile or the Milky Way, would have run along to the east. If you go into Starry Night Pro and put in all of those planetary systems and the Milky Way, you'll see that the exact position of the Nile, as it was several millennia ago, and these star systems exactly align. But what's more important is that they don't align at specific times. They align all the time. So if you go back 50,000 years and run 50,000 years forward in that 100,000-year period, that configuration stays together. So it's almost as if the Egyptians knew that X marks the spot, and this is our place in the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
It's also that we're moving into the alignment in 2012 with the center of the galaxy, and it seems that the ancients also understood that.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, I don't want to get sidetracked, but the Mayan culture is being spotlighted for the most part about the 2012 phenomenon. But this all ties together with 2012 and the 26,000-year cycles. Aren't we in, and that's also maps over the Hindu teachings about the various ages. Where are we at in that 26,000-year cycle, and how does that relate to the pyramids?
In a 26,000-year cycle, we are at the very bottom of the 13,000 years. It starts out as a golden age. Plato talked about it as the great year. It gets denser and denser into a silver age, bronze age, iron age, but then the iron age becomes darker and darker and darker. And so the turning point that's going to return us back up into the second half of the Iron Age and back up, though, we're actually climbing toward the Golden Age again. The demarcation point is, of course, winter solstice, December 21st, 2012. And so we're just about to hit the transition where things could start getting a bit better.
So rather than a lot of New Age people that are out there are saying that we're actually moving into the Golden Age, but technically, this is a cycle or a circle, and we're simply moving or revolving around. So that's the tilting point that will take us back into the Silver Age again, on the way to the Golden Age. Is that
it goes iron, bronze, silver, golden, and the peak of the Golden Age is 13,000 years from 2012. So, but the thing is that this is a metaphor I like to offer. Particularly in the Northern Hemisphere, as we're approaching Christmas or winter solstice, it gets darker and darker, and the days are shorter and shorter, and it's very difficult indeed, and that's why we start playing around with our Christmas lights and candles and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
And then when it hits solstice, the very next day is a little bit longer, and the next a little bit longer. But the day after solstice is as long as the day before solstice, but because we're densifying and it's getting worse and worse, we feel worse and worse.
Yes.
When we turn the corner, and then we have a little bit more light, because we're heading toward the light, we feel better. And I think that's the metaphor. So we're not going to instantly be in a golden age, but we are going to be moving away from that period.
Now, what about the idea that there will be, because of the position of our planet in the Milky Way, we're tipping into the other part of the galaxy, Aren't there supposed to be some kind of frequency changes, and there's some things going on with the magnetics and the Earth's shield as well, and solar flares in 2012 are supposed to reach their maximum. Do those play into this at all?
Well, they do, and I think it's quite a stressor on the whole solar system. And nobody knows what's going to happen. And
yeah.
Psychics who have been pretty good at doing predictions for decades suddenly draws a line where they can't look into the future.
Huh.
And the thing that gets me, though, about Armageddon and it's going to get worse and worse and the whole world's going to fall apart is it robs us. It contributes to the fear soup that we live in, but
yeah.
It robs us of the possibility that this horrible bloodbath, blood from death instead of blood from life, could actually come to a bit of a close. Now, when they're telling us about Armageddon and Doomsday and all of that, they're using images of the tsunami that already happened, the volcanoes that already happened.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not saying that we're not going to have a little bit of disruption as we go through this portal into a new way of being and thinking, but I think that the vast majority of what's going to happen has happened. Now, it's very difficult to be optimistic in this day and age with the Gulf oil spill and everything else, and it's shaking us down into understanding that there's something wrong with what's going on and that we can wake up. And so
yeah.
I still feel optimistic that this turning point is actually going to bring us into higher levels of consciousness that will return us to something that gives us a semblance of what the Egyptians were already knew and lived in a way that upheld different values.
Yes, and you know, you bring to light something that it has been intentionally covered up. We don't know when some of the evidence of the various pharaohs was destroyed, but there were long periods when there was a matriarchal society that was in harmony with the male side, and the matriarchs or the divine feminine side was actually the ruling side for quite a long time, and they lived peacefully. How does that, what was that like according to your research, and when did we shift into a totally patriarchal consciousness?
Well, ironically, and I think you'll find this interesting, 3113 BC is the beginning of the Mayan calendar, but it's also the beginning of dynastic Egypt, and I think that patriarchal Egypt started with the Mayan calendar, and that we've had 5,000 years of this, you know, fighting and history, the story according to him, and history's when the soldiers came and all of that. Now, when you say ruling, that also sounds hierarchical, but matriarchal cultures are not the opposite of patriarchy where women rule the men.
Right.
It's a system of balance that insists on a balance between the masculine and the feminine. And our school system and our value system has trained us to devalue all things feminine and symbolic, and if you can't see it, it's not here. But the Egyptians understood that we had to have a full deck. The masculine consciousness developed within the female, the feminine consciousness developed within the male. And every temple has got a winged disc over the top, and it's the lower self has to surrender to the higher self before a person goes in, an initiate would go into the temple to do holy work. But the symbol of the winged disc is masculine consciousness is the snake, and the vulture with the wings is feminine consciousness. And it's basically saying if you're not in balance, you cannot do the holy work.
Mm-hmm.
And there's much more to it. I mean, it goes on and on. But because we're looking through patriarchal lenses, and most Egyptologists are as well, they've been pointing out and highlighting the boy stuff, as I say, and
yeah, right.
The feminine stuff is right in front of our eyes, and if
right.
you watch Pyramid Code, the episode, The Empowered Human, you'll just see the symbols are everywhere, and once you can decipher them, then you go, well, I see what they're telling us now.
Yes, and the DVD, it just takes you, walks you through this, and you can't deny the truth of it. And also, you have overwhelming evidence that many of these ancient cultures, such as the Egyptians, we're far more advanced than we are today. I mean, that's obvious just by, you know, trying to figure out how they assembled these things. You can't even put a razor blade through them, even today, through the cracks. But they used sound and color and advanced technology, didn't they?
Well, yes. And when you think of how much crystal there is still wide open on sites that are largely restricted, mind you, but it's there, and that pretty much any device we have right now, a radio, a watch. They all have little quartz crystals.
Mm-hmm.
DVDs are run with quartz. Computers are run with quartz. And they had these massive hunks of quartz, like at Saqqara, Karnak, there's one that's like 6 feet across by 6 feet wide by like 5 feet high. One piece of quartz, and if you go up to it, you can pull off little bits of quartz crystals. Well, these are all over the place, and there used to be expanses of hundreds of square feet of floor in these huge courtyards at Saqqara with a 10-inch quartz crystal floor, laser-cut crystals, huge altars at Abu Ghraib. And interesting, that mimics the name of the jail, so I'm sure that the powers that be know about this stuff and want to associate it with torture instead of with high-level technology. So there's a lot of evidence that's depicted in the series that basically, I mean, you can't deny what you can see and touch with your own hands is one of the things that Hakim says in the series.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There are quite a few glyphs that seem to be referred to by just about everybody. They've kind of overshadowed the rest of the glyphs, but they appear to be flying machines, exotic devices, and some kind of possibly time travel, teleportation machines. Have you been able to, is that a significant aspect of all of the findings, or is it just a small part of it?
Oh, what's significant about it is that it was hidden, and it's only in the last, 10, 15 years that a piece of stone fell off a lintel way above your head in the Abydos temple. And so, and the other thing is that the King's List has erased the names of the people who were had the highest level of consciousness, in my opinion, Akhenaten and Nefertiti, King Tut and Hatshepsut, and they were all touching in to the Golden Age. So we have seen a deterioration in Egypt as well. And part of that deterioration was covering up the evidence of the secrets of the, flying machines and teleportation devices and that sort of thing. And so even within ancient Egypt, there has been a deterioration between the Golden Age and the Iron Age. And so this is really interesting because what traditional Egyptologists want us to look at is just the last little bit, Ramses, and that's just a very, very short part of the whole of Egyptian history.
Mm. One of the interesting possibilities that's brought up in the DVD is the possibility, which I had never actually considered, that the pyramids are linked to all the other sacred sites, and were designed to raise the frequency of the entire planet to extend the level of consciousness as the higher age, or golden age, moved into the descending ages. You seem to be the first person who's actually brought that idea into our awareness.
Well, and I'm not the only one who thinks it. Some of the scientists that are in the Pyramid Code will elaborate on that somewhat. And it was a good idea. So it's like we can recall past lives now, but I think that in those times we look to future lives. And when you think about it, if we knew it was going to deteriorate so horribly where, we'd be pitted against each other and ruining the planet, which would just be absolutely horrible to think about for the Egyptians because their whole thing was about being in balance with nature, and we're certainly not doing that.
No.
And so, yes, this worldwide grid would have been able to, like it worked on the ley lines or the dragon lines, as they call them in China. And if you look at Heaven's Mirror, Graham Hancock's book, he divides the Earth up like an orange, the sections of an orange. And every 72 degrees, if you ignore up and down, you'll find a sacred site like Angkor Wat in Cambodia, Easter Island. It goes on where these major sites, Teotihuacan, Mexico, Tiahuanaco in Bolivia, all of these sacred sites actually surround the globe, and it was about keeping the grid charged. And now that things are disconnected, some sites have been destroyed, the casing stones have come off the pyramids so they don't function as well as they used to, and the energy is as dense as it's getting, then it doesn't function in the same way. But if you stand inside the pyramid or near the pyramid, the energy is palpable. And so if that was turned on and working on a global scale, you would have felt a great deal of buoyancy, psychological and conscious buoyancy that would have gone with it.
Well, it certainly would be a different world than we see out there today.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the other things that I found interesting was that not only did they use renewable harmonious energy, which was free, which is still available today, you tie it into Tesla's work and the fact that J.P. Morgan, basically, because Tesla wanted to make free energy available to the population, the masses that are on the planet, J.P. Morgan simply shut him down because he couldn't make a profit on it. So that's why we're stuck with electricity.
Yes, and it doesn't work that well, and we may lose the grid as well. But they certainly made a good lot of money off all of us over the last decades and decades. So in 1910, all the system was there to have wireless technology and communication devices and free power. And they shut them down, like you said, and drove Tesla into obscurity. But if you look at the Tesla Tower that was constructed through the funding of J.P. Morgan, actually, in the beginning, on Long Island, you'll see that it's on top of a limestone aquifer, and it's got descending passageways that are about 45 degrees, which is very similar to the construction of the Great Pyramid. And most people who understand the workings of the Tesla Tower don't realize that it's actually constructed very similar to the Great Pyramid. But the tower isn't a pyramid, but it is a structure above ground, but below ground it's almost the same.
And similarly, we've had the ability for at least 60 years or longer, probably longer, but at least 60 years, to have transportation that does not use oil. And, of course, I think our listeners all are pretty much aware that there's a shadowy global elite that is kind of pulling the noose and controlling all of this for their own selfish benefit.
Well, that's right, and they don't seem to care what they ruin along the way, like the disaster in the Gulf right now, 3 months old with millions of gallons of oil going in every day, and they're, kind of not really doing so much to clean it up. They're not allowing external help to come in. They've got these tankers that are ready to scoop the oil up, but they won't let them start. They've made us dependent on roads and cars where they could have had, high-speed rail systems instead that would have been cheaper, which affects transportation of every amount, every item, every goods and services, people going on airplanes. They've done a really good job of making themselves rich. And, all the lies that we've been told about it being so hard to get and there being so little of it and stuff when it's gushing and gushing and gushing. What do you mean hard to get? So it really has been about suffering for many and profit for few. And that would never happen in a matriarchal culture.
Right, right. And then we, of course, you could point to a lot of other things. I mean, they make profits on all sides of the wars, and they simply trigger them when they want to accomplish some particular goal, like taking over a region or toppling a good leader that's not corrupt. This has been a pattern since the beginning of time. But it goes back so far, and unfortunately, it seems like they've had the ability to perpetuate themselves through some kind of direct lineages that pass power along and continually tighten the noose on humanity until we are the slave species working for them.
Well, and I wouldn't say since the beginning of time. I'd say since the beginning of the patriarchy.
Right, right, which would be 3103 B.C.,
3113, and it has passed through, and it's been them and their buddies and them and their family members and all of that, and they see us as, you're right, as the slaves, as the sheeple, as the people who are expendable, and who cares if you ruin the planet a little bit. So it's very short-sighted, because one of the mandates of matriarchal societies is to leave more to the children, to respect the wisdom of the elders, but to make sure that we are leaving something that's sustainable. And understanding that children, are the evolution, and move beyond us. And in the patriarchal culture, if you don't get caught, it's not wrong, and use it all up, me, it's over.
Yes, yes. Well, it does seem to be that there's no conscience whatsoever, and there's an extreme contempt for the very people that they built off our backs, that are feeding their system. They have such contempt for us that, doing things like 9/11 and various terror events is just, another tool for them to manipulate a little bit more and get a little bit more control over us.
Right, and when people say, don't let them, what are you going to do?
Right.
Paying your taxes? I mean, of course, if we had electric cars and things made sense, we'd all buy them. But they had it, and they tested it, and then they took it off the market.
Yeah,
and so, you know, like, they really have imprisoned us and made us pay for our own imprisonment. You have to register to pay money for a lot of different things with insurance and everything else, and utilities and taxes. And there is another way to set it up that's fair for everybody, that's good for the planet.
Yes, absolutely. And the whole monetary system, as far as I'm concerned, needs to collapse because earning interest on money has caused a pyramid scheme, a Ponzi scheme, which involves all governments, bank bailouts, and it's just a transfer of wealth from us to them, and that we keep paying. I can't believe that the people are just not getting this, but we're so well indoctrinated and hypnotized by, you know, the various things that fascinate us and that are dangled in front of us that we have become complacent. It's really kind of horrifying.
But it's complacent by design.
Aspartame
mixed with fluoride and pharmaceuticals that aren't ever tested with each other and given in combination. Pollution and chemtrails and TV and everything else in the school system. I call it hoop jump biscuit. They force us to learn something and then they give us a test. We give it back whether it's correct or incorrect.
Or
it doesn't teach us to think. It doesn't teach us deep knowing. And so over, you know, millennia of doing this, it has taken its toll. And I think that the powers that be are incredibly patient and there's a franticness going on. I think, you know, little children are upset with, you know, finding oil-soaked dead birds, and, you know, what they call cleanup is going and picking up those birds before the cameras come, even though they've got it illegal to take pictures. But anyway, there's lots of reasons to be upset, distracted, frantic, and ungrounded, and that's the culmination, and then they keep pouring on fear. You know, there's all kinds of things going on now that's only going to make it worse.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think people are beginning to wake up and see that if something major is going on in the world, even a weather. I've had guests on my show that talk about HAARP, which was kind of partially Tesla's work, and how they can manipulate the weather. And the other countries and our country are back and forth heating up the ionosphere and causing huge vacuums and then collapses, which cause tidal waves and earthquakes. So we don't really know. Even if nature's of natural functioning is a cause of her, the planet shifting around, or if it's some kind of electronic device that's manipulating the weather, they can actually have control of it now.
Oh, they have definitely got control of it. Now, the other thing about the oil digging is they had a permit for 2 miles deep. They went 6 miles deep. Well, is this related to earthquakes and shaking up the mantle? Do we know the answer to that? And they said that they can stop storms from blowing the oil into the states, keep it far away, but then it makes it cold in Canada, and it's been ridiculously and unseasonably cold in all of Canada, and increasingly so. They call it global warming, but we're all freezing here. You know, big hailstones the other day here in the Calgary region, and, you know, they really are able to manipulate the weather, but, I mean, it's like a domino effect. Like if you manipulate here, it's dangerous to play God.
Yes. Well, your research on the pyramids and these ancient sites would indicate that we're reaching the end or the turning point of this extremely horrific dark iron age that we're in, and that it's going to probably get worse. And the good news is that it's not going to last very long. It's a shorter period before things start to turn around at, I guess, the solstice. The winter solstice?
Well, we can only hope, but the thing is like I said earlier when we were talking about it being dark before Christmas, you know, we still have some dark times to go through, but the thing that worries me is that when people are, you know, keep expecting it to be dark, they'll see it dark, you know what I'm saying? And there's so many things that they've already done to disadvantage people. If you draw straight lines, I mean, like people who've already lost their homes in Louisiana, I mean, you know, and then you get another tidal wave or whatever. I mean, it's hopeless for a lot of people already who have lost their homes and lost their jobs. when there aren't jobs being made, and they already moved all the manufacturing plants out of the States, most of them, you know, and offshore. And how do you rebuild that? I mean, the infrastructure is so deeply, deeply gouged and broken by design. I think there's going to be a considerable amount of chaos, and it's very difficult to reconcile because, you know, there's some pockets of the world that are very pristine and beautiful. And so it's not like the whole world is sinking, but the infrastructure and the governments are certainly taxing us. So that's why I think that if we turn to the Egyptians and look at how they had things set up and what they valued, it really is almost a roadmap for our resurrection and coming back, because they really did understand interactions between other dimensional spheres, higher levels of consciousness, intelligent design and science and quantum physics and astronomy, and they understood an awful lot of things, but they certainly understood how to live in harmony with nature and balance. And so it's only in the later dynasties that you see the chariots and the warriors and the cut-off hands and all of that, and that's what they try to tell us the Egyptians were about, and that's not it at all.
Right.
At all.
Right. Right. You know, and we don't get the story, which is why I highly encourage people to get your DVD set, which is the Pyramid Code, because it really is a model for us to begin to wake up to and see that there are other ways that have been lived that are higher and more peaceful and harmonious. And once people wake up and realize that, we don't need to recreate the wheel, you know, but we do need to see that there are other ways and that the way that we're going is not the right way. It's so out of balance that it's not even funny.
But, you know, a lot of times you hear people blaming us, you know, like we use too much oil. Well, we use oil because that's the only option. How many options do we have? We don't. And so I don't think that it's the common populace that's causing the problem through greed or over-consumerism.
No.
We're handed all these commercials. We're given all these subliminal responses.
Yes.
We're trained as children in school how to be consumers, how to be hierarchical, and how to judge other cultures or not know anything about them. So they're foreign to us. And so I think that real people, I've been to 52 countries, one more since that bio was written, different countries, and the people of the world are beautiful and kind, and they care all about the same thing. Everyone wants love and respect. Everyone wants their children to do well. But the powers that be are the ones, as you said earlier, that, you know, stir up a fuss, give guns to both sides, you know, pay themselves for contracts to rebuild, so they got to blow it up, but whoops, they forgot to rebuild. Obscene what's going on out there, and then they take control of the media and tell us what to look at and what we see and what we're interpreting, and that's not it at all. But the thing is that if we were into deep layers of knowing, higher levels of consciousness, we wouldn't be, you know, they wouldn't get away with it in the same way, but somehow they've managed to control us into thinking this is normal, and it's not.
And the sad part is, not only that are they we thinking that it's normal, but they're training us to like it. They're training us to
like it. Well, I don't like it, do you? I don't like it.
No, I think it stinks, and I agree with everything you said. I mean, anybody with open eyes can see the truth of the matter, and, you know, people need to wake up and see what's going on around here. Because if they don't, the freedoms are going to be taken away permanently. We never have really been free. But this the noose that they've got around us on so many different levels, it almost seems like a hologram.
Well, that's something to be considered. But the thing is that when you say we wake up, okay, we woke up. Now what? Like, you know, lots of people are consuming less or getting rid of the things that they've bought. You know, that they don't use, but still, it's a vicious cycle of, you know, consumerism, and that's not life. That's not the whole story about why we're here.
No, absolutely not. I think the only way that one can make a change is if you turn away from the materialism that we're absolutely bombarded with at every turn, and start looking inside for spiritual answers. Now, I don't have any, but that's a direction that seems to be one that takes us out of the matrix of control.
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's so insidious. And,
there's,
you know, we still have to wake up from our meditation and pay our taxes.
I know.
You know, like you can be sitting in the woods on, you know, an obscure piece of property. And, I mean, I actually tried to go off the grid in Alberta, Canada a couple of years ago, and they charge you a levy for not using utilities. So if you're off the grid and you've got a wind charger, you still have to pay the equivalent of what you would pay if you were getting power from them. Well, where do they get the power? Getting power from them, it's a metaphor, too.
Right.
And it's really, like, I think there are lots of good people in the world who have done yoga and meditated and fasted and become pure, who also aren't free. But the other thing is that as long as one person isn't free on the planet, and there's unfair things going on, a bodhisattva isn't free either.
Right.
That's the definition. We all have to be free of it, not just a couple of people going, yippee, I got away with it.
No, I agree with you totally. What do you see as a path out? What can we do?
Well, I happen to agree with you about the monetary system has to crash and we start over again with credit for infrastructure and not fake funny money chasing itself around. Infrastructure, real jobs, things that give people creativity and inspiration, and they build something, that they have something at the end. But we don't play with that, like the shoemaker's sons have long forgotten how to make shoes and that sort of thing.
I know.
The whole thing about being local, but it's larger than that. I mean, there's lots of people who go to their local market. Basically, these big corporations need to stop being able to get away with this stuff. You know, they're like a person, and they've got laws that protect them. And so, you know, there should be, you know, the government would have to say no to anything that hurts the planet, say no to, you know, these huge corporations that gouge people, and start again with widget makers. And you trade a sack of potatoes for, you know, whatever else, paper, shoes, whatever. Real stuff, real people, art, you know, music, that sort of thing. But we've been dragged away from that, and computer games and all that stuff. It's just like,
oh, I know.
It's multi-generational problems. And
yes,
people
it is. And
are really...
Yeah.
Pardon?
And it's an intentional process that's occurred. It's not, I don't believe that it's our fault.
No, it can't be our fault. But the thing is that how do you grow out of that when there's so much damage that's been done?
Right.
You know, like when I hear about people who, you know, a whole street of houses that have been foreclosed upon, and the people turn the taps on and, you know, put holes in the walls before they leave. Well, how do you recover from that?
Yeah.
You know, huge area. I mean, it's just, there's so much systemic destruction. Bridges that are going to fall down, and do sometimes. You know, the railways aren't working right. We're not building things to make transportation cheaper.
No.
There's a way to clean the whole thing up. We need new ideology, but we also need people in Congress that don't have thousands of lobbyists, and they, the best system money can buy is what we've got. So you pay for a vote, and then you have to pay back to the people, you know, la, 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 it goes on. But, I mean, the whole system of government, they call it democracy, but it's not. If it was a democracy, we would vote. Like I always said, you know, we take our ATM cards, they said, okay, you've got to give $2,000. Do you want that hole outside your driveway fixed? Oh, yeah, I'll take that. Do you want to pay the pension of a guy who was in office for 6 months for, you know, the rest of his life, or 6 years for the rest of his life? No, I don't want to pay for that. I don't want to pay for his lunch either.
Well, the sad news is the governments are all pretty much bought up already. It's kind of like Monopoly. You know, they've taken over all of the governments. And, you know, for instance, military side, and then it gets into the military too. I mean, we're getting sidetracked, but that's okay. I just saw a documentary on Area 51, and you can't walk beyond a certain boundary at the risk of being shot, and their car is just waiting there to do something to you. You know, this kind of childish mentality that of us versus them and hiding all these things that they have, that's got to all fall apart somehow.
Yep. Yeah, they're hiding things from us, but they're also charging us, like they're using our money for these secret offices.
I know,
and that sort of thing.
I know. It's a disgusting problem.
So the government is what really has to change, and there's too much invested. But, you know, it's easy. I mean, like in the ancient, let's go back to the matriarchal times. The highest level, the person with the highest level of consciousness was the person who governed. And
right.
they didn't get anything for it. They got their
right.
room, and they got their lunch. They didn't get paid. It wasn't about, you know, you do this for me and I'll do this for you. It was
right.
about the whole populace being taught how to be wise and
yes.
how to serve humanity. You
yes.
got your brownie points by service, by giving.
Yes.
And they say, you know, when you get to the pearly gates, it's not how many toys you have, it's how much did you give. Well, this
yes.
system is not set up that way. But the other thing is that, like I said before, if you don't get caught, it's not wrong. Well, people learn to cheat and make that okay.
That's right.
And it's not. You know, you can
That's
buy
right.
a degree online, but it doesn't mean you're wise. There's so much corruption, and it's insidious in the system. The whole system needs to change. But people are ready. People know what's right,
yeah.
and people know what's good and who's lying, and they know. Like, the thing is that even though people realize that there's so much hidden, you know, they it's not that they let it happen. You know, we're being controlled, and so how little people overturn that, I don't know. There's a lot of people who would like to, but, you know, 2 million people marched on in Washington not long ago, and, of course, they don't report it. So what's
right,
the point?
Right.
I mean, our voices have been silenced. I'm
That's
not
right.
sure how this turns around, but it will turn around through values and principles and through the people who are being bought stopping that.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I've given a lot of thought to it, and the only solution that I can see is if money just completely becomes worthless and they lose their power, or, you know, somehow they become exposed in the process of that financial collapse and everybody's in the same boat except for them.
Well, you could start by convicting people who you know have cheated. And if somebody has done something illegal, they're convicted and that they're not beyond reproach.
Well, since the judges
and
are
funny
bought,
money, just pardon me.
You know, if the judicial system is corrupt as well,
yeah.
What are you going to do about that?
Well, the whole system needs to go, including, like, the education system. We're looking at a paradigm shift in education from teacher-centered teaching to learner-centered learning. But the, you know, the professors and the old teachers, you know, like the hierarchy, and
right.
it's systemic. Okay, what we're saying here, Lance, is it's systemic. And the patriarchal system needs to go. And
absolutely.
It actually is time for it to go. And we're
yes.
to rebuild in a way that's more humanitarian. And no one's
yes.
going to argue with that. And the people in Afghanistan that are rebuilding understand kindness. And everybody needs, like I said, love and respect. And next we get
yes.
Abraham Maslow's needs, food, clothing, and shelter. And after that, we can look to enlightenment and, self-growth.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with every word you said. I don't want to veer off too much, but there was one of the things that I noticed in the video that brought up the metaphor of the scarab for our brain and the seven senses. And the Egyptians indicate that we have over 360 senses.
Yep.
Do you have any idea what those senses might have been about, and have we lost them entirely, or are they just buried under the illusion of the smoke and mirrors that we were just talking about?
Beautifully framed question. When the easiest way for me to think about 360 senses is to have a person stand inside a sphere, and then almost like an owl can look 360 degrees. You can look all the way around, up, down, and inside.
Mm-hmm.
That's one metaphor. The other thing is a handle on two senses. So when you think of a term that's synesthesia, is when you can hear a picture or see music, and babies can do it. I've done quite a lot of research on this. And when senses are blended, that's part of getting another sense, right? And so also, if you connect to, you know, your deep knowing and your intuition, and you're looking, you know, inside the auric field of someone and not just, you know, at their skin sort of thing, then you can, those are where the other senses are. The extrasensory perception, the flash of light that may, you know, be the light body of an ancestor that's on the other side, looking at photographs for light fields. We see that a lot now. Orbs and that sort of thing. Like our senses can perceive, and there's various biofeedback machines like the SCIO that show, you know, a weakness in liver functioning in the auric field just by taking a photograph of your fingertip and getting the field around it. And so these are the sorts of things that a lot of science, like we say, if you can't see it, it's not there and there's no science on it. But there's a tremendous amount of science on entities, ghosts, being able to measure sounds and spheres and, you know, the whole thing about, you know, dogs being able to hear so much better than us. It's that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. How did the animals know that to leave the tsunami area? People didn't, but the animals did. Why do flocks of birds fly along a river and curve with it? Because of the magnetic resonance. So they're feeling energy fields that are more subtle. But it's static energy and electricity that cuts us off from being able to feel those subtle things. I went into the Amazon jungle and stayed at a camp there, and there was no electricity for at least 100 miles in a radius. And I just wanted to stay. I felt my auric field was 30 feet wide. I could feel it being calmed by the palm trees way up high. And I just, and when I came back, I could hear it ringing and hissing. And, you know, when you walk even on the, you go on a horse or camel straight south from the Great Pyramid, you know, you have to cross these huge power lines and they just pound on top of your head. And so all of these synthetic, static, mixed up chemicals and stuff like that robs us of it. So the Egyptians did, they had 12-strand DNA. And we've been dumbed down, but now we can rebuild from 3 to 6 to 9 to 12, 2 to 3 to 6 to 9 to 12. And so as we, you know, fortify and reinvent ourselves and put ourselves into, you know, take away the toxins, take away the static interference, the interference patterns, understand our energy field, and even the shamanic work that's being done where people realize they're under psychic attack and they have protections for themselves. Once all those kinds of things that interfere with our perceptions are gone, then we can start to rebuild, and it is possible to manifest and to bilocate, and all chemical processes are real, and there are people who study these things. And so even when we look at Heroes, the TV series, you know, each person has one ability. But actually, each of us, as high-level initiates, were trained to have all the abilities, and levitation was one of them. And so you see the yogis and the mystics, and they can eat glass and sleep on nails and walk on fire and all those things. Like, that's because they have mind over matter. They understand how to control material reality. And, and the thing is, though, with manifestation, it has to be done in a proper atmosphere. So what a lot of people do when they hear about manifestation, say, well, I want a red car, a new one, a new Ferrari. Put $1 million in my bank account. But that's easy. Yep. And so manifestation would happen in an energy field where the lower self would surrender to the higher self, and a group of people would do that in an atmosphere, a holy place, if you will. And then, you know, everybody would get into the vibrational frequency, and then something would arrive from the other side, and it would land in one person's hand. Well, if that person said, that's mine, yippee, I'm leaving, okay, have it, but you can't do this again, because the manifestation is for the good of all.
Right.
If we're so tied up in me, mine, winning, I've got more stuff, my house is bigger, you know, and that's coming away. You know, we're being stripped of that as well, where we can't win that way. But the thing is that the purpose of a higher level of consciousness is not for the self. It's for all of humanity. And so once we understand that we're instruments of service, we're divine beings having an earth experience, we clear all the, you know, the stuff that we've been talking about away from us, then we can start to have more senses. And, you know, you literally manifest. It's quite remarkable how spirit can send messages, things, opportunities. We need to know how to look for it, but also what we do with it. So is the opportunity something that you get a whole lot of money and then you retire and do nothing, or do you keep working to serve? Because spirit works with us if we're making sense of what we've manifested.
Absolutely. Wow, that is just brilliantly said. I hope everybody heard that. And if you didn't hear it, go back and listen to the archives again and listen to what she just said, because that's very important information that we don't hear every day.
And too many people, though, even, you know, for the wonder that The Secret was and what it did, it's really teaching people to manifest something for what they desire,
That's right. That's right.
And that's not it. It's I desire to serve. How can I best serve? Right? So you may manifest a plane ticket. You may manifest a plane ticket, of which I've done many times, but it's to go somewhere to help.
Exactly. It's not about you.
No, and
it's
so
about all
I
of
often
us.
Say, if spirit wants me to go and do that, then my favorite prayer is, handle it.
Right, yeah, I do that too. And if it doesn't happen, then it's not supposed to happen. And that, I think, that requires a certain level of detachment from materialism, because otherwise, you know, you're worried all the time, and we're in a state of constant stress, and that lowers our immune system, and blah, 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 blah.
Yes,
absolutely. And then, of course, don't get me started on religion and what a control matrix that is, and, you know, the whole thing about pursuing your relationship. I mean, my God, that's shoved down our throats. You know, you must find your partner, or your lover, or your take Viagra so you can have more sex and all that. Well, this is a totally disempowering path that we're on. And since we're coming closer to the end of the show, and I don't want to end on a low note, what do you feel are the most significant findings or information that you'd like to share with us, you know, before we have to sign off?
Well, the Egyptians were into having a really good time, and there's a whole symbolism that goes with blue lotus and papyrus, blue lotus being a symbol of the sacred feminine and papyrus being the sacred masculine. But they have all these images of the stem of the blue lotus wrapped around a wine jar. And so there's been experiments done recently of taking blue lotus flowers, which are almost extinct, and putting them in wine, and then drinking the wine, and people having a marvelous time and feeling hypersenses and sensory experiences and feeling really, really good, and their brains streaming with energy. And then when it's over, they just get tired and fall asleep. And so we've got such a thing about, oh, thou shalt not do drugs, even though they're funding, you know, largely what's going on in Afghanistan is to fund the poppies so that people can do that, but then it's illegal. But, you know, the idea that we have to be so restricted, and we can't have this and we can't have that, and we have to minimize this calories and exercise so that we look good. You know, the Egyptians looked good because they felt good.
Right.
And they, you know, they have very beautiful bodies, and you know, they understood about giving and sharing and connecting with spirituality. And, you know, if we're not really, not religion, but spirituality, if we're not connected to our higher selves, we're miserable. We don't feel like there's a purpose.
Right.
We don't know why we do anything. You know, you think, well, I could do anything now. I'm retired. I could do anything. Well, what do I want to do? I don't know. But because we're not coming from a place of understanding our soul's purpose. And that's what the Egyptians are pointing to. They had connections to higher beings, to extraplanetary systems. I'm not saying that it's the aliens that built the pyramids, but they certainly were able to connect with beings from other planets, and they call them the ancestors, other planets, other realms, whatever you want to say. And so we've divided all that up. Patriarchy, you know, puts every department in a different building in the university, and we're never going to figure all this out unless linguistics starts to talk to archaeoastronomy, talks to, you know, all of it, so, you know, everything. It has to fit together in a socio-cultural, spiritual context. And I think that the messages that are on the temple walls in Egypt are messages we, as high-level initiates, left for ourselves to wake us up to who they were and who we can be and who some of us are already. And it's all there. We have the same DNA. We're going home.
Wow. What a beautiful message. That's very inspirational. And of course, we know that there are parts of our DNA that are presently blank, but those could be, I don't think there's anything that's junk. I think everything is just waiting for the proper trigger to be switched on. And maybe there is a switch that is similar to a light switch, and the light will come on.
Well, where are those switches? To me, having been to sacred sites all over the planet, having been to Egypt 24 times, the triggers are at the sacred sites where you feel something, you have visions. And standing in the place where they stood, all of a sudden, the sacred geometry of the buildings, the metaphor of the cavities of the body being represented in the halls of the various temples, all of this triggers us whether we know it or not. But when we're joining with the consciousness, when we're following our intuition and going to a sacred site because we feel the impulse to go. Too many of us argue with that. And so it is possible to trigger this DNA and to stand with somebody else who's already triggered at the sacred site. All of a sudden, it's life-changing.
Yes, absolutely.
But then they tell us, oh, don't go there, be afraid. Oh, no, no, in Egypt, it's dangerous. It isn't dangerous. They're just trying to stop us from waking up in every way possible. They're going to radiate us while we go through the airport. People go, oh, no, no, I'm staying home. You
know,
get radiated by my refrigerator instead.
It is a travesty. Well, you know, I didn't get to ask you about some of your experiences in your private moments where you were able to explore where the public can't go. And I have another 1,000 questions for you. So I'm hoping that you'll be able to come back sometime and we can expand upon where we started here, this seed that was planted today.
Yeah. It sounds like we've got an awful lot to talk about.
I think we do. I think we do, and it's an important stuff. So would you please tell everybody where you can be found and where they can get your DVD and your book also? I didn't get to ask you about that either. So you have to come back.
Okay, that's fine, Lance. I'd be happy to. It's pyramidcode.com. Pyramidcode, not the series is the Pyramid Code. The website has no the. You can. There's a contact us button that has my email if you're interested. There's also information about the Magic Egypt trips. I'll be doing Ascension Portals 10, 10, 10 in the Great Pyramid 11, 11, 11, and 12, 12, 12. So we'll actually be there for the December 21st solstice outside around the Great Pyramid. And my book can be ordered, and the DVDs can be ordered off my website in PAL version for Europe and Australia and New Zealand. Amazon.com and Amazon.ca both carry the DVD series. So you'll find it all linked up on my website.
Wonderful. Well, Carmen, this has been a very wonderful chat. And I hope that people enjoy this and listen to it several times. And I wish you the best in your journeys and hope that people will follow your work quite diligently.
Good. Well, I hope you send me a link and I can put it on the podcast page of my website because the archive of my radio interviews is there so people can.
I will be happy to do that because this is one that shouldn't be missed. And we didn't get in. Like I said, there are so many things that were coming through my mind, and I think we have enough for another show or two easily.
Okay,
so
well,
I'll be following your work, and I'm gonna continue watching that video because I've seen it twice now, and I keep finding more incredible information in it. So
I've heard of people who've watched it 12 times.
Oh yeah, well I know that I'm gonna get up to 12. I'm just kind of savoring each moment. So. You're one of the most amazing people on the planet, and I thank you so much, profoundly, for being on the show, and my thanks for being on
the
show.
Okay, thank you so much for doing your homework so we could have this conversation, because you held your end up, too.
Oh, thank you much. All right, Carmen,
okay,
I will talk again. Thanks
okay.
a lot, and that's the end of the show, everybody. Bye-bye.